Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Ron Keel, the metal cowboy from the Ron Keel Band, Steeler and Keel, and you're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast. Crank it up and keep it up.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, where rock has been hiding for over 5 years now. In this special episode, we have him back, people, the metal cowboy, Ron Keel. Ron joins the program to discuss, well, shit, just about everything. Enjoy.
I just want to thank you for interrupting what could possibly be one of the coolest songwriting sessions of my entire career. You hear that hum in the background, Baco? You hear that hum? That is not the hot tub. That is my 50-watt PV Valve King amp, and I am just totally immersed here in the bunker writing some new Ron Keel songs. But I'll go ahead and turn the amp off
You want to sing like 10 seconds of something or not?
No.
Give us a scoop.
No. I'm pretty sure if you play music on your podcast, you're going to get slapped on the wrist, right? Isn't that the rule now? We can't have any music on the podcast.
I think it's fine if it's like you playing it in your house. Like I can pick up a guitar and run through it, but yeah.
Well, let's not. I'm going to go shut the amp off and get rid of that hum because, man, I really am totally consumed with this songwriting process. Right. It's the worst drug I've ever done. You know, I never did crack, but, man, this songwriting creative process, this thing that I've been immersed in now for the past couple of months has been all-consuming. And, you know, I picked the guitar up. And I can't put it down, and I'm really enjoying that process.
Yeah,
I have been turning down a lot of interview requests. Of course, I get a lot of requests. Hey, man, come on my podcast, come on my YouTube show, or whatever. And I have, for the first time in my career, I've been turning some of them down because I could do them all day long. I literally could do a podcast or an interview segment all day, every day, 24/7. And I've got to, at least at some point, say no. But I can't say no to Cobras and Fire.
Aww.
And my friend Baco, is LC there with you?
No, he was planning to try to bump in. So I do. He was hoping to kind of pop in for the call just for a second. He's looking forward to meeting you in Nashville. And we'll touch on that here in a little bit.
Awesome.
But yeah,
he was possibly contemplating calling. What was that? He was possibly thinking about busting in on the call. That's commitment for you right there.
No, he wanted to basically just pop in, make fun of us, and then pop out.
So. Well, tell him I said, hey, and I can't wait to meet him in Nashville and see you again in Nashville at Rockin' Pod Expo, August 6th and 7th in Nashville, Tennessee. It's always a good time, and I'm looking forward to it.
One of your many hometowns.
Indeed. And, you know, I have deep roots in Nashville.
Absolutely.
A lot of people have asked me the last couple of years since really my job in Sioux Falls, my quote, the only real job I've ever had at Badlands Fun as the leader of the Badlands House Band and on KBAD Radio 94.5 FM. Since that job disappeared, everybody kind of expected me to move back to Nashville. And I really love it here in Sioux Falls. Renee and I have a beautiful home. I'm 5 minutes from the airport, and I'll be in Nashville whenever they need me, but
I thought you and I were going to hop in the Roncord and take that 14-hour trek on the road.
The Roncord. The RonQuest. It's the RonQuest. But, man, I will not have the RonQuest on that leg of the tour. I'll actually be flying into South Carolina. We've got the South Carolina siege the week before. Let me see. I don't have the dates pulled up on my calendar, but I can do that fairly quickly. I think it's July 28th in Allendale, South Carolina, July 29th in Bluffton, South Carolina, July 30th in... I'm lost. I know I'm at
Is it on your
Myrtle
website?
Beach
I'm
on
looking
the
at it. I can help you out here, buddy.
They're all on the website, yes. Right, that South Carolina siege, end of July, in July 28, 29, 30, and 31. Go ahead and give us the dates, Jason. Well, I'm going to go set up this, shut off the amp so we can get rid of the hot tub buzz.
Well, I see the retroactive Sweet 16 celebration on July 31st, and then a couple of acoustic dates leading up to that on the 28th in Owendaw, South Carolina, the 29th.
Owendaw.
and the 29th in a city that sounds like it was named by Gene Simmons, Bluffton, South Carolina. And the 30th at Goose Creek, South Carolina. And then on to Myrtle Beach, like I mentioned, for the retroactive Sweet 16. And then, bam, we're in Nashville.
That's right. Then I'm going to take a rental vehicle from Myrtle Beach, hopefully a Johnson City date on that Thursday, the night before the Rockin' Pod kickoff pre-party concert event, and I'm going to try and do that road trip, and instead of flying back to South Dakota for a day, I might as well just enjoy the great southern hospitality of South Carolina and Tennessee and enjoy some Dixie time.
And plenty of good food down that way, too, as well.
And I'm on the keto diet, so I have to be very careful. And I have lost some weight. And I got that COVID gut, like many of us did. And I've been on the keto diet now for a couple of months, and it's paying off. And we do have a lot of great recipes. I can even make the Ron Keel chili without beans. It's not the same without the beans. But you and I are scheduled for a chili cook-off in
Nashville.
We got to
do that sometime.
Correct?
Yeah, like in January, sometime where it's really cold. You know what I mean? That would be a blast if we could. I mean, of course, I have no idea how to arrange something like that. But yeah, if we could actually do something like that and raise a little money for some charity, that'd be even better. But
it's got to happen, man. Let's do it. It's got to happen. And I would love to do that. And I'm very proud of my chili recipe.
As much as Sinzak would like us to do it in Nashville, something about eating chili in that 95-degree Tennessee heat doesn't really work together for me.
Man.
Make your own hot tub when you're done, though.
It's always a good day to eat Ron Keel chili, and you can find that recipe in the Rockin' Recipes for Autism book, and the proceeds from that book go to charity and autism research. That is a fantastic cookbook available online, Rockin' Recipes for Autism, and the Ron Keel chili recipe is in there, along with Don Dawkins' recipe. I love Don Dawkins' recipe. 4 cubes of ice in a glass, pour Jack Daniels on top, and consume. Well, what a great recipe.
Yeah, that's non-conventional.
I'm kidding. That's not Don's got an actual recipe in the book, but I know that the Jack on ice is his personal favorite.
And since you plugged it, if people want to go to YouTube, just search Baco Hotter Than Hell Chili. There's not only a recipe, but a video of me showing you how to make it. And
dude, I'm in. Is it keto friendly?
No, because it does have beans. And I'm not an expert on the keto diet, but you just mentioned that. But you know what? Take the beans out if you want, I suppose. It would still be pretty good.
And you know what I do is I add some beef broth, which gives it that, the liquefied constituency that the bean juice usually provides. But you know, it's okay. I'm dealing with the keto diet. Got to get back in rock star shape because there are a lot of big shows on the Ron Keel Band calendar this summer.
Yeah, I don't have any big shows, but I do need to kind of figure out something before I get too close to summer here. I also have a bit of a little COVID weight to shed. At least I'm going to give it a shot. But
Hey, yeah, we don't blame everything on COVID, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everything's... if it's not Trump's fault, it's COVID's fault, right?
Yeah, and before I forget, maybe we need to do... at some point, I guarantee you're going to get me. We need to do a Ron Keel and Baco cooking show where we basically... Here's my thought, Ron. We just have different recipes, and then you offer a Ron Keel keto-friendly version of that recipe. What do you think? Food Network?
That's a great idea. Absolutely, man. I'm in for any of that. If we can have some good food and raise some awareness or money for a good cause, I'm all in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I wanted to hit you with something right off the bat, just kind of a little, an icebreaker kind of thing. On Cobras and Fire this month, we do it every year. We call it March Badness, where we basically break down a record or two that we think is horrible. And you know, playfully though, you know, like these are artists that we love and you know, like Kiss Music from the Elder was what would be a classic example of something that we would have fun with. But this year we did a bracket where we brought in Chris and Aaron from Decibel Geek, and we each picked 8 records that were now where the voters are deciding what record we're going to talk about. I just was curious if you had to, what did of your illustrious career, what is Ron Keel's worst record in your opinion?
Oh man, that is a tough question because I do have an answer for that. Ooh, that's going to piss
off all my
fans. I
wanted to guess, too. Can I guess?
Absolutely.
Is it Larger Than Live?
No. Okay. Hell no. Not by a long shot. That's a great album, dude. Well,
I listened to it. That's not my... I don't even know which one I would pick, but I'm like... my gut was that was going to be the one you didn't like because it was kind of towards the end of Keel. And it just... it was a different kind of setup, and I don't know. I do have a couple questions on that. But anyway, what's the record you got?
Dude, if you have to, and again, I don't want to piss off my fans. These people have paid my bills for 40 years now.
Right.
But I think the shittiest record I've ever done was the Steeler album.
Oh.
It's unlistenable to me, and it's an embarrassment. It's unlistenable. It was a young green kid who was still learning how to write songs. There's a couple of good songs on there. Cold Day in Hell is a good song.
Yeah,
Backseat Driver is a good song. Serenade is a good song, but not in that format with that Bee Gees falsetto voice that I used on the Steeler album. And I know that so many fans love that record deeply, and it's a big part of their 80s history and upbringing, and it's part of the soundtrack of their lives, and I don't want to offend them by not liking it, but that's my personal opinion. To me, it was it's unlistenable, and... Luckily, I've been able to put it to bed and make peace with it. The Keel Fest event that we did in 2019 in Columbus, Ohio, went a long ways towards me making peace with that album because I finally listened to it again for the first time because we did the Steeler reunion. Mm-hmm. I had me and Rick Fox and Mitch Perry on guitar and Dwayne Miller from Keel on drums doing a Steeler set.
Did you even reach out to Yngwie to see if you could do it?
Dude, I'm not reaching out to Yngwie. I've done that many times through the years. You know, I have. I have reached out when we had the, was it the 30th anniversary? Did a radio show on my radio show, Streets of Rock and Roll. And we did a 30th anniversary special. And I interviewed Rick Fox, Mark Edwards, the drummer, Mike Forney, the producer. And revisited that, celebrated that milestone, and reached out to Yngwie and his management. Got no response. I have heard from Yngwie's lawyer a few times through the years, but you know if I was going to, and you know, I do have some news, which probably the next time I'm on your show, I could announce that. I'm very tempted to announce it right now, but I do believe, Baco, and this is a scoop for you and Cobras and Fire. I do believe there is at least one new Steeler song in the pipeline that we're going to record and release with that Keelfest lineup. Rick Fox, Mitch Perry, Dwayne Miller, and myself. And I'm sure this will end up on Blabbermouth tomorrow, of course. But anytime I say something really...
It'll be a week or so. I think this is going up a week from Thursday. So,
well, as soon as you air this, Blabbermouth will pick it up and make a big headline out of it.
Nice.
But still have a great relationship with those guys. Mitch Perry replaced Yngwie in Steeler, and he is the Steeler guitarist as far as I'm concerned. Rick Fox and I are still very tight and good friends, and I've got a song that I believe would only... I mean, you could call it anything. It could be on a Ron Keel band album or a Keel album or whatever, but It just sounds like a Steelers song to me, and I think we should get together in Vegas and cut this with me, Mitch, Dwayne, and Rick, and have a new Steeler track in the pipeline for some future release or something. I'm just ready to address some of those old issues and revisit those challenges, because I'm all about the challenges. That was what happened with Streets of Rock and Roll, the Keel album from 2010, that it was really all about, can we still do it? Can I still do it? Can I still sing like that on a high level and deliver a great product, write some great 80s metal hard rock anthems, and make a new Keel album? And we did, and I'm extremely proud of that. And at this stage of the game, as the clock is ticking on me and all of us, I'm feeling the challenge of let's do one more Steeler song, maybe one more Keel song, cool. Another Ron Keel Band album. I am inspired by the songwriting process, as many of our fans know. I have been in media isolation for over 2 months now, in the bunker where I speak to you right now with my guitar in hand, and I've been writing, creating. I put the radio show on hiatus. Still doing the podcast and the interviews, but that's an easy gig, man. You know, because you host a podcast. You know how easy it is to host a podcast, right? You just record a conversation. Yeah,
absolutely.
And put it on the
internet, I mean, I've only
right?
said seven words so far.
Well, yeah, you can be a little long winded. I wanted to remind you about that.
Did my wife tell you to say that?
But it's just the way you are, man. I mean, I've got to try and get a word in edgewise whenever I talk to you on the podcast. And for the listeners who may be tuning into this, I did not have any game plan or anything. Baco just said, hey, we need to get you back on the show.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of days ago, texted me, says, we need to get you back on the show. I said, okay. And here we are. We have no game plan. I don't really have an agenda or anything to promote except all the millions of cool stuff that I'm involved in and all that. But it's great to talk to you. And I'll let you go ahead and say your piece. If you have any questions, Baco, please feel free to call me and... what do you want to know about? I gave you a brand new song, gave you the scoop on the new Steeler recording. I mean, nobody else gets this kind of stuff but you, dude.
I just want to know why, if you have an explanation why you're the only person who's ever had a problem working with Yngwie.
I had no problem working with Yngwie.
It's a joke. That guy's burned so many damn bridges.
I had no problem, and we could not create or write together. You know, that was a problem. But trying to sit down together and write a song, that was a problem. Some of the live shows, and Yngwie only did 9 gigs that summer of 1983 when we were together. He did 9 Steeler shows. I had a problem with his presentation on stage. He didn't care about the song. He didn't care about the band. He just wanted to show off, and I had a problem with that. But that was, I mean, you're going to get that in any band situation. And when he quit to join Alcatraz with Grant Bonnet, it was a really nice conversation. He says, man, I got to go. Grant Bonnet wants me to join his band. It's Grant Bonnet, for God's sake, who had sung with Rainbow, and Blackmore was Yngwie's hero and idol. So he gets to play with a singer that's, you know, really a big part of his influence and join a signed band that's already got a record deal, and Steeler did not have a record deal at the time, except the Shrapnel independent deal. And so it was a great opportunity for him. Even if we had been best of friends and solid songwriting partners and all that, he still would have quit, and I still would have wished him well. So I didn't have a hard time. It was not a hard time working with him. It's been a hard time fielding the questions in interviews like this for the past 37 years. But other than that, I'm cool with it.
And I only do it to be a dick, so. you know, you mentioned the Serenade version that's on Alone at Last. I saw you perform that in Nashville, and that was the first time I had heard it done in that sense. I heard the Alone at Last CD for the first time when you sent it out to all your patrons as a wonderful little Christmas gift this year. I'm with you. I much prefer the way you do it now versus the Steeler version. I'm kind of glad it's out there because that record is kind of a special one for a lot of us. But how close can you get to that falsetto now?
Oh, not! I can't get far enough away from it, man. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I don't even know what possessed me to do that. But, you know, I grew up in the 70s when bands like the Bee Gees and the Eagles and, you know, a lot of bands were using that type of voice or that falsetto. And it did not occur to me at the time to sing it in the lower octave. And it's a little high. I mean, if you sang that in full voice at that octave, it would probably be overbearing for a ballad-type song like that. So the only real option was to sing that falsetto version. People loved it. The girls all melted at the clubs in L.A., at the Whiskey and the Troubadour and everywhere we played in L.A. I'd do that song, and it was obviously a very special song for me and for the audience as well. But that vocal, I can't believe Mike Varney, who produced that record, I'll blame him. Blame Varney.
Okay.
He produced that record. I can't believe he let me get away with that shit. I mean, come on, Mike. Make me sing it like a man. You're the producer. It's your job. But, you know, I still am, obviously a control freak, and I want it my way. And at the time, that was my way. It's not anymore. And I'm glad the song has a new lease on life and is still part of my solo acoustic gig every show that I do. And granted, Baco, a lot of these people that now I was in Idaho a couple weeks ago for a couple of acoustic shows, mm-hmm. and I guarantee you, a lot of those people in the audience really probably hadn't heard it. They don't know who I am. They may have heard, Ron Keel, he had a band called Keel and sold a few million records back in the 80s. They don't know all the details. They're not hardcore Keelaholics. They're just people out to have a good time and see a live show. So they're not really familiar with me. And I pull out a song like that, and it's early in the gig. As I go through the solo acoustic show, it is pretty much in chronological order. I'll start with the old days and Steeler. And I guarantee a lot of people don't know that song and never have heard it before, but it seems to work when I sing it the way I sing it now. I'm very proud of the new version on Alone at Last, the deluxe edition, and I'm glad that I can celebrate the 40th anniversary. I mean, I didn't expect to live to be 40, much less celebrate the 40th anniversary of my first good song, so I'm really, really proud of that.
You know, on the Alone at Last CD, like I mentioned, I had never heard the whole record prior to getting it around December. What was it about the original that you felt you needed to remaster and dig into this project? Was it COVID? Blaming everything on COVID.
No, it was just the fact that the technology has come so far, man.
Okay.
And listening to the original versus the new remastered version, you can bring out all those frequencies and really just the album sounds fantastic
it
for
really
an acoustic
does.
Record.
I think I texted you with the first, you know, like maybe three tracks in. I'm like,
that's right.
This thing sounds fucking amazing, man.
That's right. And that's just the technology. I had intended on doing a sequel last year, as you may know. All of my subscribers at patreon.com/Ron Keel, and you are one of the Keelaholics mm-hmm. subscribing there, and thank you for that. I had promised a sequel last year called Alone at Last Again, and I was going to release one song per month, new acoustic versions of some of my favorites and personal songs like Hearts Gone Wild and so forth, and I had a problem with my hearing. It was a swollen eustachian tube in my left ear that was really just throwing off my hearing perspectives, and I'm listening back to the mixes going, man, I don't trust my ears. I can't do this. So I decided, rather than try and push it and create something I'm not sure of, let's just remaster that Alone at Last CD. And one of the incentives for that was the fact that one of our fans, I believe it was Jody Hickman, sent me, or Sheldon Bergenheimer, one of those hardcore Keelaholics, sent me a link to where the original CD, Alone at Last, from 2006, was selling on Amazon for $950.
Wow.
And, you know, and I'm going, man, that's crazy. Why don't we just remaster it, re-release it, let the fans have it for $12.98 at ronkeel.com and free to my subscribers like yourself. The Patreon Keelaholic members who were members in December all got one for free I said free as a Christmas gift from the Metal Cowboy. So it made great sense to just remaster it and re-release it with a couple of bonus tracks. Now, we've got the Just Like Tennessee acoustic version on there and a new acoustic version of Singers, Hookers, and Thieves, which is one of my best songs ever, and a duet with Paul Shortino, my good friend Paul Shortino from Rough Cut, Quiet Riot, and so forth. Paul and I did a video for that song over Christmas vacation in Vegas in a town called Beatty, Nevada, about 120 miles outside of Vegas. And I can't wait to release and share that video clip with you and the rest of our fans.
Right on.
Any day now. We're working on the video clip. It should be done. But this was a real Wild West video shoot. We've got me and Paul in this bar, the Happy Burrow Chili and Beer in Beatty, Nevada, singing on the bar stools with cowboys and saloon girls. And there's a really cool story that goes along with the video clip. And can't wait to share that with you. And we'll release that hopefully within the next week or so at ronkeel.com.
Cool. And of course, both those songs appear on the Metal Cowboy album.
That's correct. Yeah, the Just Like Tennessee is the unplugged versions on the Metal Cowboy album, but the acoustic version of Singers, Hookers, and Thieves on Metal Cowboy is just me by myself. This time I brought Paul Shortino, my buddy, back into the picture to sing the duet with me again and make a new video for that clip. It's just it's a great song. And really the story of my life, the song was written on the shower wall with nice. A marker, with writing a marker on the tile in my shower. And, you know, we all sing good in the shower. Even you sing good in the shower,
thanks,
Baco,
man.
Right?
Appreciate that.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, no,
you are the singer in God's favorite band, Jesus Chrysler, right?
Oh, I mean, man. Yeah, you done some research on me, huh?
I got your number. I got your back, brother.
All right.
But I wrote, you know, we all sing good in the shower. Mm-hmm. And when I get in the shower, I just let out that line. I sold my soul to the music when I was 13. I thought, well, that's really cool, man. I sold my soul to the music when I was 13. So then I went out and got a Sharpie and started writing on the tile in the bathroom. And
you're
next
walking around
shower,
the house
next
naked
day,
and wet looking for a Sharpie, and then you go back to the shower? That's
man,
awesome.
No. In the Kiel House, there are Sharpies everywhere.
Oh,
trust me, Baco.
I got,
dude, these are Sharpies banging on the mixing console. The Sharpies everywhere. Sharpies on the microphone. The house is full of Sharpies.
Now,
so
is that a paid endorsement?
I got long arms.
Is that a paid endorsement?
It's unpaid. Okay. I can reach out the shower curtain and just, there's a toothbrush and there's a Sharpie, whatever's out there. You're going to find a Sharpie in the Kiel House. And so every day I would get in the shower and I'd write a couple more lines. And literally that became my shower song. And I thought, how cool is this? I'll write a song in the shower. And you know, I'm superstitious like that. When I did the Metal Cowboy album in 2014, I used a different guitar pick for each songwriting session and to write the song. And usually you just, whatever's laying on the kitchen counter or whatever guitar pick that, you know, you can find. I had a Frank Hannon guitar pick. I had a Metal Cowboy pick. I had, you know, all these different picks. And once I picked up that pick and started creating that riff, I stayed with the same pick for each song and ended up selling the pick collection that I used on the Metal Cowboy record, because I used the same pick to write each song had its own pick, and then each for the recording sessions I used the same pick that I used to write the song. So that was a pretty cool I think it went for $300 for charity when I got finished with the album. We auctioned off that pick collection set, and I'm just superstitious like that, man. And you know, the strange thing is, the last couple of days, as I've been down here in the bunker working on songs, an Oz Fox pick, Oz Fox from Striper, just ended up in my pocket the day that he had surgery. You know, Oz Fox just had brain surgery, and we're so thankful that he's okay and he's doing well. And I thought it was just the strangest thing that I reached in my pocket and pulled out an Oz Fox pick, and then somewhere in, you know, the mess that is my man cave, basement, so to speak, I was digging through some old stuff from the 80s and found Oz's business card from 1985. It's got a Striper logo on it, same logo, and it says Ozzy Fox, O-Z-Z-I-E, Ozzy Fox, and his phone number at the time. So his business card just kind of like popped up. This is all around the time that Oz is having this pretty scary brain surgery, and he's a dear friend. I love that guy to death, and we're so happy that he came through that well, and I'm looking forward to a positive report and seeing Oz back on stage with Striper very soon.
Absolutely. I just saw something on social media today. I don't know if he himself posted it, but because I saw his wife's update a couple days ago or the day of the surgery. After, or maybe it was the day after. But yeah, it's as good as can be expected, you know, considering just coming out of surgery. So yeah, hopefully continued improvement in that sense, man.
Exactly. I saw Oz on the Monsters of Rock cruise last year. We got to sit and have a coffee and just catch up and celebrate our friendship. And you know, we go back a long ways. And the guys in Striper and I are, yeah, there's a special kinship with some of those bands like that, because I pegged Striper to open the first Keel show, the very first Keel show ever, April 7th, 1984. I wanted that band, hey, let's get that band Striper to open for us. And they did. And that was like a big moment for them. And Tesla, when Tesla got signed, they were called City Kid.
I was
gonna
ask.
Opening for Keel at the Country Club. And, you know, that special relationship you have with those bands that they started out opening for you, and now they're, you know, Hall of Famers as far as I'm concerned. So that's pretty cool to still have those friendships and relationships with guys like Michael Sweet and Oz Fox and all the guys in Tesla and so forth. And, you know, Metallica and Rat both opened for me back in the day as well. But and Steven Piercy and I are still good friends, but the Metallica guys don't call me very often. I don't know why.
Oh man, I think their drawer full of jeans probably cost as much as my house, but they are what they are. You know, I love Metallica. Hey, let me talk to you a little bit. I'm going to throw a question from your podcast back at you. You know, for those aren't aware, you actually have the Ron Keel podcast. I can tell you, it's pretty much everywhere. I know it's on Spotify and Amazon, but shortly after you launched it, it showed up on the podcast app I use called Podcast Addict, you know, and so when it hits there, that means it's basically everywhere. But one of the questions you ask every one of your guests, at least it's a frequent question, let's put it that way, it's about, you know, the whole should you be outspoken? I know you are. But, like, how do you deal with, like, yourself internalizing some of this stuff? I don't want to offend my fan base, but at the same time, I am a human being who cares about things. The whole shut up and jam thing. You clearly don't mind sharing your thoughts on things. So how does Ron Keel answer that question?
That is a great question, Baco, and thank you for asking. It's something I struggle with and wrestle with on a daily basis in the media and in my social media presence and everything that I want to express myself. I mean, we are musicians, and at being artists by nature, it's our job to express ourselves, right? I mean, whether it's through lyrics or music or making a stand. And God forbid, back in the day, if you would have told Bob Dylan or Muhammad Ali to just shut up and sing or shut up and box.
Plenty of people did, I suppose,
where would we be
right
now? Well, they did. And God,
thank God
Muhammad
they didn't
Ali is a perfect example, man. A guy who really stood up for his beliefs and paid the price and ultimately became the greatest. And, you know, I'm not comparing myself to him. I do express myself enough to where I think people know where I stand, but I don't shove it down their throats. You and I are a perfect example, because you and I are from diametrically opposed political views. We see each other's support or lack thereof of various political causes and beliefs. And I know you and I don't think alike in that regard, but we can still be friends. We can still have conversations like this. It's not my duty to change people's minds. You know, I'm not here to preach or to make everybody think like I think. That's believe what you want to believe, man. Think how you want to think, vote how you want to vote. But I do believe it's my right to at least tell you how I feel. You know, you don't have to do what I do, but at least I want to show you what I do. I mean, that's my way. I do believe that as people of influence, we have to lead by example. People have to look at Ron Kiel and view me as somebody who stands by his convictions but doesn't shove them down everyone else's throat, someone who works hard, lives right, takes care of the people I love, and I encourage my fans to believe in themselves. I think that's the most important thing. If I can preach to the people that are listening to my music, my voice, my interviews, believe in yourself and follow your heart. Do we have an obligation as artists to do that? That's a tough one, because if you have 10 million people that are buying your product, then cool, go ahead and piss off half of them. You still got 5 million people that are buying your product. Like LeBron James. I mean, or anybody else. Tommy Lee. It's okay to piss off half your fans. I don't have enough fans to be able to piss off half of them. But I'm pretty sure that everybody knows where I stand. And songs like Red, White, and Blue from the South by South Dakota album by Ron Kiel Band can speak for me through music and video. And I would love to express myself more. I feel like I'm always holding back. I'm sorry to make a long-winded answer out of this, but it's an important topic and a great question. I find myself holding back and posting something, or I'll create a post, and I'll say, no, just don't say it, man. Don't go there. And I'll not hit the post button, because in the end, it's not going to help. It's not going to change a lot of people's minds, even though we have. I did get, during the last election cycle, people on your side of the fence that were coming to me saying, hey, man.
At some point here. Anyway.
Yeah, we should, man. You know, and that's cool. That's cool. I have, and, you know, I am a conservative, I guess you'd call it, and I know you are not. But
fair.
I've got some very...
Yeah.
I've got some very dear friends. Tim Heine, who was the manager of Kiel, who is a hardcore liberal, and he's on your side of the fence as well. He and I are brothers. We are brothers, man. You can't come between that. And politics or religion or any of that can't come between that. I've got friends that are Muslims or Buddhists or whatever, and they don't believe the same things I believe, and that's cool. There was a time when we could express ourselves without hatred or prejudice. And when you get to that subject of prejudice, that's a big can of worms, because being a long-haired rocker in Nashville in 1980 it's not a race, but it is a way of life, and it's a look. It was what I looked like and how I acted in Nashville in 1980. I had leather pants. I had earrings in my ears. I had long hair. And I was severely discriminated against in every facet, at every restaurant, everywhere I went. Not because of the color of my skin, but because of how I looked. So I felt that, man. I've come to blows. With
I can relate
people.
To that as a metalhead in a small Christian community growing up, and you know, in a small town in southern Minnesota. You know, I mean, I think the comeback there is that, I mean, we're making a choice, but at the same time, it doesn't really make it right.
That's correct, and we choose to look the way we look, or wear what we want to wear, and act the. So, you know, it's a deep subject. I appreciate you asking. I'm sorry for the long-winded answer, but it is an important topic.
No, that's fine. And on the actual topic, I would say this, that it really irritates me when fans or people just commenting on social media. And that's kind of what I'm talking about in my answer here. When they do say things like shut up and jam in response to just something they disagree with, because the fact of the matter is, you know, they're not doing the same thing when the other view is being shared by maybe a different artist. And you have every right to say what you want as much as that person commenting on Facebook. And to me, that is the bigger issue there with a lot of these things. It's okay to disagree, but why do you disagree? If you're not willing to say that, then you're the one who needs to shut up. You know what I mean? I don't think an artist should feel required to say or stand up or take any issue, nor should they feel required not to. You know what I mean? To thy own self be true, Ron. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. And it does affect the end result in terms of your sales, your product.
Yes, of course.
And, of course, as you mentioned, people are only going to slam you if they disagree with you. Mm-hmm. If they agree with you, if they got your side, if they share your same views, they're not going to slam you. So the only people that are going to slam you are going to be the ones that disagree. And
I have found you can curate
slope.
A select group of people that will challenge you in a way that's healthy as opposed to just attack you when they disagree. So
I agree. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of the cartoons or the memes. You know, you want to put somebody's face on a cartoon and create some stupid caption. You're not going to change my mind with a meme. give me facts. Give me real life results. And, we will change our minds. And Baco, I have changed my mind on issues throughout my life and my career. Mm-hmm. And not the career has nothing to do with it. This is personal now. There are people that I voted for in my life that I ended up believing were scumbags and criminals. And I supported them at the time, and I voted for them at the time. My views have changed. I've matured. I've gotten older. And there are presidents that I voted for that I'm really ashamed I voted for them. Trump is not one of them. But there are presidents in my lifetime that I was wrong about. And this is an evolving viewpoint. As we get more facts or more revelations, we have to be able to evolve. And that's part of science. As we learn more about the universe and the world we live in and life in general, we have to adapt to new science. Galileo, who you might remember him from the Queen song, Galileo.
Thankfully, I heard of him before that song.
Yeah, well, he was a brilliant scientist who believed that the Earth revolved around the sun. You know, he invented the hot pocket. No, he believed the Earth revolved around the sun. And because of that, he spent the last 10 years of his life in prison, under house arrest, because he believed that the Earth revolved around the sun. Now, we all know better now.
No.
But they didn't know better back
then.
There's
plenty of people that don't know better now.
Well, yeah, the Earth is flat and whatever.
I know what you mean. But yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the science changes, man. You know, and 20 years from now, a lot of people are going to get a big settlement from the vaccine manufacturers, because if you took this vaccine 20 years ago, you were entitled to a settlement. I can't even believe I said that on your podcast, but good thing nobody's listening, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who checks us out anyway? You really never know. I mean, it is pretty early, but things are looking good and turning the corner there, so... how about this?
Only 900 deaths so far from the vaccine? That's not bad.
I have no idea. I haven't heard that, but probably from that.
I just said it on your podcast. That makes it true. If I said it on the Cobras and Fire podcast, it must be true, right?
Oh, it'll be in a meme tomorrow, that's for sure. Yeah, there are people that would. I know for a fact there are people that really want me to kind of like get into a lot more serious stuff with you. But that I'll tell you this, on our, we talked about the insurrection on this show. We've only touched on a handful of serious issues ever. The death of the drummer of my band. Our relationship with our parents is kind of serious. We've gotten into that a couple times without joking around. And then we talked about the insurrection, and we didn't even mention Democrats and Republicans. And there were people who, by the way, I want to say, I'll almost applaud them. Very, I don't know, without anger or vigor, just voiced their opinion that they prefer that that's not where we go. You know what I mean? Like, they listened to our show for a different reason. So they didn't really criticize us for having that thought. They just said, you know, this episode wasn't for me. I'll check you out next week. So,
right on.
And that's all good. You know what I mean? And to me, that's kind of how you should approach this stuff. That said, I think it's time we lighten it up a little bit. Let's talk about the Ron Keel Band. I know you got a new album in the works. So when are we going to get the advanced copy that I can review?
Well, the Ron Keel Band, that really is a we are lightening it up now. We're going to make some jokes about
the Ron
Keel Band.
I do hard shifts all the time, Ron. Yeah.
Man, I am immersed in songwriting right now, and you know, so many of my friends, Baco, my peers and other artists in the industry spent 2020 writing songs and locked in their basements, working on tunes. And I did not, man. It was the first year of my life.
You were actually pretty busy, weren't you?
Insanely busy. And I do stay busy. 2020 was the first year of my life I did not write a song. And I'm making up for lost time now by just locking myself down here in the bunker and working on music and being creative. And it's a huge challenge. I am enjoying the process. I love creating. Like I said, I think earlier in this interview, it's like a drug. I wake up in the morning around 4 a.m. I'm an early riser. I can't wait to get downstairs with my first cup of coffee and my first guitar riff or my first lyrical idea or something. And
do you bring Toots down with you?
I do sometimes, but Toots, people listening, Toots is my parrot. She is a African Senegal parrot, 18 years old, and she's my best friend, but her ears are very sensitive to loud music, so I can't have her in here when I'm cranking it up real loud.
I'm actually glad you did that, because people who are more regular listeners, both of them, probably do know that I call my wife Toots, so it's actually a good thing you separate. Yeah, my wife's over at your house at 4 a.m. That's not a good thing for Baco.
We have the Toots thing, and I remember you posting something about Toots, and I'm like, oh, but he's talking about my bird.
I threw her name in. I did my own version of your song because you threw
up. That's right.
Yeah. And then, like, you texted me. He's like, did you say Toots? And you thought maybe I knew about your bird or something. But
yeah, I thought you were singing to my birdie, and you know, She is my best friend, but she's awfully loud. She screeches. She gets excited when I get excited. Nice. So when I get excited and I'm jamming and stuff, she will start singing along and screeching and stuff. And plus, she's sensitive to the loud music. But the creative process has been amazing. And the hardest part of it for me, Baco, honestly, the hardest part is reaching the bar that I've set over my 40-year career. I have written some songs in my life. Now, I've written thousands of tunes. I could probably count on two hands the ones that are really, really great, the ones that are really special to me. I'm not saying everything I write is awesome. It's not. There are 10 songs, I think, that, you know, The Right to Rock, Wild Forever, Fight Like a Band, My Bad, The Cowboy Road. You know, there are some songs, just like Tennessee, that I've written that have really, in my opinion, set the bar pretty high. So, after 2 months of staying here in the bunker with these guitars in hand and stacks of lyric sheets and focusing on this creative process every day, I think I've got probably 7 really good songs and 2 great songs. I'm not going to release another album. I'm not going in the studio to record another track until I know it's great. It's as good or better than anything I've done before. And I'm going to keep striving for that each day. I don't even send these songs to the guys in the band. The guys in my band have still not heard what I'm writing right now. And I've been down here for 9 weeks, solid. The bar is set so high that if I can't do it as good or better than I did it before, I'm not doing it. So that's where we're at with the release of the new album. I am not rushing this process. In fact, I'm about to shit can the first 7 songs and write 7 more because I just want it to be great. I did the same thing for Metal Cowboy in 2014. I wrote 50 songs before I finally had the one, a song called The Last Ride on the Metal Cowboy album that became the foundation for that record. And Fight Like a Band was the same way for the last Ron Keel Band album from 2019. That song is extremely special to me and very important my life and in the history of my career. I need more of those. And if I've got to compete with that. And I'm competing with myself. I'm trying to write and create something, not just to have a new album, say, hey, I wrote a new record and we got a new album out. It's got to be great or it's not going to happen. So I don't put any restrictions or timetable on it. I do have a plan for my next release that I'd love to share with you once all the business pieces are in place for this new project. You'll be the first to know. And it is pretty exciting. I do believe strongly that whether you're a fan of Keel, Ron Keel Band, Steeler, Iron Horse, Fair Game, the Metal Cowboy, the Country Years, whatever. If you followed me and enjoyed my work in any of those eras or projects, I do believe there's going to be something on this new record for everybody. So I can't wait to tell you more about it next time we talk.
You know, I remember when we were talking the first time you and I talked in Nashville. I think it was the second time you've been on the show. By the way, we should announce that this is now, I believe, your fifth official appearance. So thank you for that, Ron.
This is the fifth appearance, yes. In fact, the name of the file is Cobras and Fire 005. That's the name of my file as I'm recording this on my own gear. This is the fifth time I've been on the show. And like I said earlier, anytime you ask, I'll be there for you. I love what you do, and I appreciate our friendship and your product and the way you, your passion for podcasting and entertaining people.
I appreciate that, Ron, but it means a lot to me. We don't need to bore the audience with that nonsense, but I am happy that...
Oh, trust me, they're already bored. They've been listening to me talk for 49 minutes and 51 seconds. They are already bored.
No, they're clinging in there. They're like, I've never heard Baco say so little.
Never heard Ron Keel so little.
Oh, I mean, come on. When you sat down...
This is the quietest I've been in a long time.
When you sat down with me, you were about a year, I think, from releasing Fight Like a Band, and you were telling me just, you know, doing the whole sales pitch, you know, like, this is the best thing I've done, I think, hands down. There was someone with you that kind of nodded his head in agreement. And I remember in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, we'll see. And you know how much I dig that record. That you definitely knocked it out of the park. So, you know, I'm not one to really question you anymore, because every artist says that when they got something new, you know what I mean? But yeah, that was the real deal, that record, man. I'm looking.
Thank you.
What? Hey, I know you gave Decibel Geek the title. What is it again? The new album?
Oh, I've changed my mind.
Oh, even better.
That's not the title of the record. I have literally Baco this morning, just today. I started last night, and then I started late last night on this one, and picked it up early this morning with the signature song, so to speak. But the title of the new record now is it's all changed, and I can't really reveal it yet. It's a big deal, and I can't speak more about it at this time, because it's still there's a lot of business to be done. I've got to get Gene Simmons involved. it's gonna be a big deal. So Gene's expensive.
Does that mean it's gonna be called Blumpkin?
No, I can't tell you what it's called. Did I give Decibel Geek some kind of title? I think I did. It was at the time. It was Long Hard Night,
okay,
which was a song that I had that I've written that I'm really excited about. But I think that I have come up with something even better at this point, and I can't wait to tell you everyone about it. But right now, it's not the time.
Now, when you're on...
But I appreciate that about Fight Like a Band. You know, and looking back, as I mentioned, Raising the Bar, there's a song on that album called Fire in the Rain, mm-hmm. which at one point would have been the best song I ever wrote. And now it's just a filler song on an album I did a couple of years ago. I mean, it wasn't a single. It didn't get a whole lot of attention. But that, to me, is a really, really special song. And... You know, that's what I mean about raising the bar. There's some songs that I'm really, really proud of, and I want to measure up to that this time. And it's not just about the quality of the music or the strength of the riff mm-hmm. or how clever or how well-written the song is. There's got to be, if it's a Ron Keel album, it's got to say something, man. It's got to make a statement. And of course, The Right to Rock is the ultimate anthem statement of my career. I've been trying to follow that for 37 years now. Mm-hmm. And songs like Wild Forever or Fight Like a Band, I've got to have a statement that it's not just about the music, it's about what you say. It's about how that message and that attitude that you convey to your listeners. Who am I? What's this album all about? Can't just be a collection of potential hit songs. It's got to be a statement. So trying to really say something that means something in a musical form at this point, it has been a huge challenge. I think literally last night, I think I came across this concept, this title, this song that I've been working on all day today. I think this is the foundation of the new record. I've got, like I said, six or seven really good songs and a couple of great ones. But that one signature song has to say something. It's got to be really important and really special. So I'll stay down here in the bunker as long as it takes.
Right on. And you know, you make a good point. I do think Keel lyrically, like even back in the 80s, really doesn't quite fit the perfect mold for a lot of the bands that you were with that were kind of doing, I don't know, let's just a lot of tits and ass kind of songs. Not that you didn't have a couple, but you know, for the most part, your songs had a topic or some kind of, you know, story or a message there.
Yeah, I realized early on that with the song like The Right to Rock in 85, and this is a pretty famous story. I'll go ahead and rehash it for you and your listeners. But this letter was printed in, I believe it was Hit Parade or Magazine, written by a fan who had lost his job, lost his girl, got kicked out of his house. I mean, just down in the dumps. And he was going to go out in the field with a gun in his hand and end it all. He took a boombox with the Keel cassette, Right to Rock, into that field with him. And he got a boombox and a gun. And he's going out in that field. And he put on the Right to Rock. And that song, he said, and this was printed in Hit Parader magazine, he said that song gave him the strength to put the gun down and get on with his life and pick up the pieces and move on. At that point, when I read that letter in Hit Parader magazine, I realized, man, these songs and these words are having an effect on people. Mm-hmm. You can't sing about death and destruction and gloom and doom, man. You gotta give them something to believe in. You got to give them something to fight for. And that was a pivotal moment in my lyrical development where I realized with the following album, The Final Frontier, which was all about the hope that mankind would transcend our differences and survive to reach the stars.
Yeah, so I mean,
that's
much for
what
that, Ron.
Song. Yeah, no shit, man. Yeah, no shit. So much for that. That's what that album was all about.
I got it.
That
no,
song,
I know.
That title. It was about hope. It was about positive hope for the future. And I, even still to this day, that lyrical thread stands. It's got to be there in this new song that I'm writing today. It's got to convince my listeners to believe in themselves. And if I can do that, then I've done my job.
A while back, I became aware of something that I hadn't been, and I have to thank you for it. But let me phrase it this way. Now, when you go out with the Ron Keel Band, you guys obviously have some time in a vehicle where you're trying to just kind of pass some time. Have you ever watched the movie Bad Channels with the rest of your band?
Great question. And I don't think we have, actually. I don't think we've watched that one on the bus. These guys are usually glued to South Park, and I'm driving the RV, and they're glued to South Park. We did watch Here I Go Again a couple of times, and I can't wait to watch this new movie that I'm involved in. Thank you for bringing up my movie career, Baco.
Yeah, you really glossed over Bad Channels there. Hold on a second, Grits.
Come on.
You are amazing in that movie. You are a very convincing fry cook.
Dude,
as someone who once had long hair and was a fry cook, I was like, that was so believable.
Dude, that was a speaking role. I had a lot of lines in that movie.
I know,
and they cut them all out. I ended up on the cutting room floor in that film, Bad Channels. But you can still buy an autographed copy of that DVD at ronkeel.com. We've got those in the store for only $20, a copy of Bad Channels.
Of Bad
Great
Channels?
Flick. Bad Channels, absolutely, man.
Oh, okay.
Because yeah,
I know, I don't want to take any money from you, but it is streaming for free somewhere. I can't remember where I saw it.
You can't stream an autograph, my friend.
No, you cannot.
An autographed DVD? Come on. Yeah. $20 at ronkeel.com. But the new movie, which I'm trying to plug, if you would let me.
Yeah, I actually have it on my list here, so we were going to get there anyway. This is my setup for that.
Okay. I'll shut up and let you talk for a minute.
No, you're good. You actually was. This is exactly how I was hoping it would go. So yeah.
Well, let's talk about my new movie, Baco.
Yeah, what's it called?
Are you going to ask me about that? What's it called?
Yeah, let the music play, man. You're part of this documentary coming up. That kind of, if I understood the trailer right, it really touches on the impact of that COVID really did have on the music industry. A pretty serious, you know, situation that still, you know, the quote from you, I think, might be right. We might be a decade from this being rectified.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. And the movie is called Let the Music Play, release date April 9th. And I was really proud to be invited. I'm going to piss a lot of people off with my comments in this film, but as I'm used to. And the comment that you just mentioned, it may take a couple of decades. That was not my comment. That was a comment from Robert Duncan, who is the former editor of Cream Magazine, best-selling author, who I had on my radio show. And every show, I have an industry insider on there. I want to ask him, even if it's another artist or a fan or anybody, what's your take on this? How's it going to end up? When are we going to get back to normal? Are we ever going to get back to normal? And Robert Duncan, the author of Loudmouth and former editor of Cream Magazine, said, it may take a couple of decades. And that's the context of that quote in the movie trailer where I'm saying, hey, I talked to this guy and he said it might be a couple of decades. Well, they took my quote, it might be a couple of decades. And it might be, Baco. We don't know. I am full speed ahead in terms of festivals and bike events and summer tour dates here in 2021. I'm going on the road, man. I'm going to play some music and sing. I'm going to get the wind in my face and sing some songs for people at these outdoor festivals and events. But the film is extremely well done by Daily Boom Productions and features 20-plus rock stars like Joel Hoekstra and industry insiders, the guys that make the T-shirts, the guys that promote the venues, the owners of the venues and promoters of shows, and getting their take on how this industry, how this pandemic has affected them when they expected to be closed for a couple of weeks. You know, we're gonna close for a couple of weeks to, quote, flatten the curve, unquote, and they're still closed a year later. The revenue lost, the momentum lost, has been devastating to a lot of people and a lot of fans and a lot of artists. It does go into how we've evolved the last year in terms of shifting to platforms like Patreon or live stream concerts and things like that. One of the things that really hit me was the merchandise guy. I don't know his name because the version I saw did not have the credits or the lower thirds with people's names. So I'm going, who's that? You know, who is that? Because I saw a rough cut of the film.
Yeah, okay.
But this guy, he's a merchandise. His job is creating merch for these big bands and tours and events. And all of a sudden, you know, there's no tours. There's no shirts to be sold. And he's losing an enormous amount of money. And the bartenders and the security guards and everybody in our industry, my heart, my prayers, my thoughts go out to all of them. 2020, and I feel guilty even saying this, man, and people don't like to hear it. You know, it was one of the best financial years of my career. Because I didn't have to spend a shit ton of money going on tour.
Right, it's huge. Actually probably... It benefited somebody kind of in your situation, you know, where Motley Crue and Def Leppard need to do this big old thing. But you could do a lot where it's just kind of you and a guitar going somewhere. I mean, and that was still kind of something that could be done during this.
Well, I was lucky last year. I got to do a couple of big tour dates before the pandemic, before the lockdown. I did the Monsters of Rock cruise in February of 2020. The Australian tour, it was absolutely fantastic. And then we did 25 RKB shows. We were booked solid. In August, we had a nice three-week tour. I mean, literally pretty much in South Dakota, in the Midwest, Kansas, Missouri, Minnesota. And these were full band gigs and big production shows. And then, of course, a few solo acoustic gigs mixed in as well. But I I was working online, and all our business went online. The Patreon platform blew up for me. Thank God my Keelaholics like yourself and all the other subscribers were engaged in the content that I'm providing online at patreon.com/Ron Keel, and we did the big streaming show sponsored by Brave Words.
That was great, by the way. I loved it. You should put that out on DVD.
Well, that's on Patreon. At patreon.com.
Well, I suppose. Yeah. You gave me crap for streaming bad channels.
Well, now manufacturing a DVD / Blu-ray, there's a big demand for that. And I'm thinking maybe we'll include...
I like the physical copy, Bron. I like the physical product.
Me too. How about we make that concert DVD a bonus part of the new album package?
Oh, you know, now we're talking.
Deluxe
edition.
Make that part of the, you buy the album, you get a bonus DVD or something like that. That makes good sense to me. And we'll find a way to share that and market it. It's not going to expire. It's a great show. And I'm really, really proud of the band and the production that we put on with 12,000 people all around the world watching that live stream concert. And we're going to continue to share that, whether it's online or in a physical realm. As a DVD / Blu-ray, I'm going to keep, you know me, I'm going to exploit everything I possibly can.
You took the good side of Gene Simmons and carried it throughout your life.
You have seen the Ron Keel Band Lunchbox, have you not?
I pre-ordered it, but it hasn't shown up yet.
This is a joke. It's a joke.
I know.
This is fantastic. I've got to post this on Instagram. It's literally, it's just a plain lunchbox, a silver lunchbox with nothing on it, and I stick a Ron Keel Band fridge magnet on the lunchbox. It turns it into a Ron Keel Band lunchbox. It's priceless. And I'm the guy who invented the Ron Keel Band fly swatter, which we sold. Actually, my goodness gracious! Talk about Gene Simmons Merchandise School 101. One of my roadies, Bruce Sinkler, created these backstage passes for us, and they're huge. It's like 5x7, they're massive. You wouldn't want to wear one of these laminated passes around your neck. And I go, dude, these are stupid. This is worthless. So I took a fly swatter handle and I duct taped the VIP pass, because in the summertime here in the Midwest on tour, we get a lot of flies in the RV. So I duct taped the fly swatter handle to the VIP pass. And I'm swatting flies with it. And I said, man, let's get this on video. So we filmed a video on the road as I'm swatting flies with this VIP pass duct taped to a fly swatter handle. And I'm going, yeah, it's the Ron Keel Band VIP fly swatter. For $20, you can get backstage and you can kill all the flies and whatever. And I posted it on Facebook. And we got to the gig. Where was it? To somewhere in Minnesota. Somewhere up in your neck of the woods. We got to the gig that day. We got to the gig, and I'm surrounded by people going, hey, where's my fly swatter? I ordered one online. It was $20. And people, and I said, there's no link. There's no way that you can. Yeah. It's not a real item. And people were asking me, hey, we're here to pick up our fly swatter. And I go, it's not real. Nice. They sent $20 to some website somewhere and expecting me to deliver their fly swatter. And the cock warmers, those go over big time, especially in the Northwest in the winter, because you may have seen some of the video clips. I wear these fingerless gloves on stage. For the first couple of songs, I wear the fingerless gloves, cut the fingers off the gloves, right? Yeah. And so I started selling the fingers that I cut off. And we call them cock warmers. And they sell like hotcakes, man. I sell 10 at a time. The Gene Simmons merchandise campaign is still in full swing. I think Gene would be very proud of the Ron Keel Band lunchbox, the Ron Keel Band fly swatter, and the Ron Keel cock warmers.
I'm going to sell the Ron Keel Sharpie holder, which is basically just going to be a toothbrush holder, and I'll stick Sharpies in it. And yeah,
oh, that's
I'll take
brilliant.
A picture.
Yeah. Dude, that's brilliant. Cut me in for 50%. I'm in for 50%.
I'm going to head up to Dollar Tree when we're done here, and then just like I'm just going to write Ron Keel RKB with a Sharpie on the outside.
That's all you need to do. Just write RKB with the Sharpie on the outside. How crazy is that?
But $30.
I don't mean to demean the fans. These fans that are hardcore, they buy my merchandise and, you know, the CDs, the stickers, the T-shirts, the autograph photos, all the cool stuff we have online at ronkeelshop.com. I don't take that lightly. Those people are spending their hard-earned cash on subscriptions to Patreon. And I know that, but these are gag items. I do not really sell cock warmers or lunch boxes or fly swatters. Those are joke items, not really for sale. Please don't send me any money asking for a cock warmer or a fly swatter.
Speaking of your Patreon thing, boy, if I could have justified it to the wife, I would have loved to have been on that test pressing of Right to Rock. Boy, that's a pretty cool thing to do, man.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad, man, I missed those. I have sent the test pressings, not only Right to Rock, but the entire Keel catalog, to Alan Cook in Canada, who is a hardcore collector, and he really stepped up to the plate and spent $650 for the Right to Rock test pressing from 84, released in 85, but the test pressing was done in August or November of 84, I think.
Right.
And that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm cleaning out my garage one item at a time. There are fans out there like Alan Cook and several others that are serious. Gunter comes to mind. Collectors. I mean, these guys people. They enjoy collecting my stuff, and they want all the original copies of everything. And honestly, Baco, you know, I've got a house full of it. And I'm not going to live forever, and when I go, I don't want my wife and my daughter or my grandkids having to deal with that. Why don't I share it now with people that enjoy it? And it's not all for sale. A lot of times when I get I'll see a post on Facebook from a fan who goes, "Man, I love this album, or I love this song, or love this whatever." We had some guys comment on the "Fight Like a Band" video, say, "Man, this." How much that song meant to them and how much they loved it. And I sent them a little piece of memorabilia from the video shoot because they had posted those Facebook comments. I didn't sell it to them. I'm not looking to make a profit here unless it's for charity. We do a lot of stuff for our veterans charities, cancer patients, the kids. You know, those are my three priorities. And we've got a lot more coming where that came from. Please, hopefully everybody will stay in touch with me. And keep an eye at ronkeel.com because we're always giving away and auctioning really cool, special, one-of-a-kind items for great causes.
Yeah, and I'll pat you on the back a little bit. I think a lot of musicians of your ilk kind of missed the boat on a lot of this stuff. Like they and I don't want to call anybody out. More, I want to give you credit for really just kind of understanding, like, it is bigger than just a bottom line, you know, that kind of stuff. You do so much cool stuff between the Patreon, your charity work. I know early in COVID, there was a video of you basically delivering an acoustic guitar to a fan. I can't remember the situation, but I just remember, like, it was a really touching thing. And there's all sorts of examples of that kind of stuff. So I'm assuming there's even more that we don't even know about.
Well, that's very selfish of me, and I admit it. It feeds my soul, Baco. This guy, Alan A.J. Daugherty, who is a hardcore Keelaholic and a great fan, I saw him posting on Facebook about how he just wished he had a guitar. You know, I'd love to play guitar. I wish I had one. I could sit around the campfire and I could, you know, learn some chords and whatever. And I just said, man, let's go on a road trip. And I got Renee in the car and put this guitar in the car. It was a guitar that I used on the Just Like Tennessee video, the only time I ever played it. And it's not stage worthy. It plays good. You know, it's a good feeling, good sounding guitar, but it's not, the electronics are not stage worthy, so I can't use it on tour. So it really just kind of sat around the house for a few years. And I said, let's take a drive. And it was, I think, 130 miles or something. It's a couple hours up to his house. And I had sent him a Facebook message, "Hey man, we're going to be in the area today. You going to be home?" And he said, yeah. I stopped by and gave him the guitar. Just gave it to him. And he takes solitude, and his wife, just passed away a couple of months ago. You may have heard about that. His wife, Amy, was a very sad story. On 2 days before Christmas Eve, her car went off the road and she drowned in the water up there and in a blizzard. Literally, the car went off the road in a blizzard. And this guy's he's a dear friend and a sweet, sweet guy. Yeah. And that guitar gives him sanctuary, a place to go and just, he may suck. I've never heard him play, but as long as, man, you know,
if you don't get through the suck stage, you're not ever going to be good.
Pick get hit it? Strings, strings make noise, man. That's all you need to know. Pick hit strings, strings make noise. Just strum that son of a bitch and enjoy the ride. And yeah, I enjoy doing that stuff. Another kid who was going through a hard time in Columbus, Ohio this past Christmas. His mom, who's an old friend of mine, posted on Facebook, "I'm looking for a cheap guitar, you know, for my son for a Christmas gift. He's in bad shape, and the guitar is the only thing that makes him happy." I said, "Search no more. This one's going in the mail tomorrow." And I sent them. I sent them that was a very nice Legator prototype, one of a kind acoustic guitar. That I sent them, and she sent me a video of him unwrapping it and playing it, and the smile on his face, and that is what it's all about. So I'm going to give it all away before I'm done, Baco. Every song.
Renee know this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then let me just throw this out there. I've always wanted a house in South Dakota. It just meant a lot to me. So,
well, I'll sell you mine for. Yeah, I think we're looking at about $750K. You know, if you want,
I was looking for more house. A free house. You know,
I said free, a free house.
I don't know. I just gave away a guitar. I'm just
we will invite you to the estate sale, but I think I've got a couple of decades left in me, Baco.
You know what?
I'm not done yet.
That's a win for me. I'll take the invite. So
I'm not done yet, man. I got a long way to go, and I do believe, like my idols. Steven Tyler and Sammy Hagar and Rob Halford. I believe I've got a good, strong 10 years left in me.
Yeah, you really haven't lost much. I'll say that. Hey, let me ask you. This is kind of a geeky question. How many guitars do you have like down there in your little bunker?
I don't know. And that's a stupid...
Is that many?
That's an egotistical question. I don't know how many guitars I own.
Like
I have
20?
No idea, dude. Oh, dude, come on. I bought three.
All right.
I bought three new ones during this interview. I'm just going to open my right hands on eBay right now. I bought three new guitars just while I was talking to you in the last hour and 19 minutes.
That's what was distracting you. I was like, "Ooh, man, that looks nice."
yeah. Just hit buy. You could always sign it and resell it, right? No, I'm kidding.
True story, Ron. I bought a bass guitar once. I can't remember if it was Musician's Friend or something like that. And I just kind of like, once the package showed up, I just kind of left it sitting in the living room for a couple days until Amy finally said, "Look, what's going on? You got a bass guitar over here. Are you keeping this or sending it back?" So I was like, "Well, the rule is if you don't say anything for 24 hours, I get to keep it." So
that's a good rule, but that's not going to fly in the Keel house, because I walk in with a guitar and you should see Renee Keel roll her eyebrows. It's like, "Oh my God, you need another guitar? But this one's different. This is different. It's a different guitar. This is not like all the other guitars. This one's different."
Well, I got to tell you, one of the reasons I like having you on, especially now, is that I really don't need to do any prep. I'm pretty comfortable talking to you, and I can just let you go and then kind of ask follow-up. So
I like that, too. And, you know, we go back a long ways. We're good friends, and we have a good rapport. And when I'm talking to Jason or I'm talking to Baco at noon, and I don't have to really think about what I'm going to say or what I'm trying to promote. I'm just going to be myself, and you and I are going to have a good time. And hopefully people will listen and enjoy it. Do appreciate your friendship and your support and the opportunity to just be myself on your podcast. I don't do this for just everybody. A lot of the times I've got to put on the Ron Keel attitude and be that guy. With you, I can just be me, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that you trust me enough to go there. And you know what? Maybe next time you're on, maybe just LC does it and I step out of the way. So I know he would love to talk to you, but. And again, let's promote some stuff before I let you go here. You're going to be at Nashville at Rockin' Pod joining us and all the people out there. I know you got a lot of people to probably get in touch with, but you're going to be doing some performing. Is that right? Is that all still being sorted out? Can you give us any details there?
Well, no, Baco, I'm going to wait until the next time I'm on the Cobras and Fire podcast and speak to LC about all that stuff. So,
okay, fair enough. I'm done
here. No, I'm kidding. Yes, I'm not coming to Nashville without singing, man. It's not going to happen. If they're nice. at the pre-party, that pre-concert party with Tommy, how do you say his last name? Go ahead, Tommy.
Tommy Skio or Skioch? I'm not really sure, but.
You fucked it up too. Cool. I was about to screw that up.
Fair enough. Let me butcher it. Yeah.
please butcher it on my behalf. Tommy, I saw it with Skoch. Tommy Skoch. That's what I call it.
Okay. That's good enough.
From
Tesla, yeah, formerly of.
Former guitar player from Tesla, and his band's going to be performing. And is it Wild Hair, Big Hair? Who is the other band?
I'm not Chris Sinzak, man. Something like that. It's like one of those hairball kind of bands.
It's an all-star lineup of great musicians, and they're going
to
be.
It's
playing
hard to find good musicians in Tennessee or Nashville.
But we'll do our best. But yeah. I guarantee you, dude. I guarantee you, Ron Keel is going to crash that party, storm the stage, grab the mic, and do something.
Right on.
Rockin' Pod, the Nashville Rockin' Pod, a great event for fans, podcasters, broadcasters, artists, everybody who wants to be a part of this community. Highly recommended. I would not miss it. In fact, I am missing the opening weekend of the Sturgis Bike Rally, which is the same weekend, August 6th and 7th. That's Friday and Saturday night, August 6th and 7th. I am foregoing the opportunity to make big money at the Sturgis Bike Rally so that I can be at the Nashville Rockin' Pod Expo. It's just that cool. And it's an amazing experience for all of us. I hope that anybody listening will join Baco and me and Chris Sinzak and all the other people, some great artists and podcasters on the agenda for that weekend. Rockin' Pod in Nashville. NashvilleRockinPod.com or the Rock and Ron Expo, as we prefer to call it.
I know you're going to be busy out there, but I plan on at least getting a little 10 minutes of your time. So,
absolutely, man. Absolutely. I'm all yours.
All right. And did you happen to mention your Patreon page? I don't know if that ever came up, but maybe we should
remind people. No, I did not. I never did mention patreon.com/Rod Keel. Far be it from me to plug my shit on your show.
No, go for it, man.
Yeah, this is where it all happens, man. And I know it's expensive. It's $6.99. It's 23 cents a day for the inside all access to the Metal Cowboy, the guy who, I mean, I'm going to give you everything I possibly can, unreleased songs, videos, demos, outtakes, live chat, experiences, VIP access at shows, merch discounts, everything. I lose so much money every month at patreon.com/Ron Keel because you pay $6.99 and I send you all kinds of cool stuff, and I work my ass off for you. So I appreciate the support there. It's more than just a website or a marketing platform. It's a family. These people here on Patreon, these are my Keelaholics, and you're one of them, Baco.
I am.
I don't know if you want me to admit that on your show.
I've been hammering the Keelahall the entire time we've been talking here.
Right on, dude. Well, you are a great supporter, and. I do whatever I can for my people, and hopefully it's enough, and hopefully I'll continue to do more. And I do believe the best is yet to come. We've got some great new music to share with you, some cool new videos, and live chat, whatever I can give you. In fact, I think I'm going to go on Patreon right now, as soon as this interview is done, and post my 2014 Mosses of Rock solo acoustic gig from the atrium with special guest Frank Hannon from Tesla and Mike Vanderhul from YNT. How about I do that right now? As soon as I'm done with this interview, I'm going to go post that exclusive video on Patreon.
amazing. And I've said it every time you've been on, but if you're a fan of Ron Keel, any part of his career, you really do deliver a great Patreon package. There's always new stuff coming up. A lot of really cool deep things going on. Like I said, I don't know. I was digging into some stuff getting prepped for this today, and it's just there's so much there. Well, the fact that I was able to record my own cover of Long Way Down done because of being a Patreon. So, well, thank you for that.
That's going on the new album, Fight Like a Fan, with all of the guest vocals, all the people that have sent me tracks of them, like you yourself, Long Way Down. It's awesome. And, you know, I
dedicated to my lovely wife, Toots, not your bird, Toots.
Toots, give Toots my love, and yes. I will think about her in the hot tub later. I've already been in the hot tub twice today because I've got your little floaty toys.
So nice.
For the listeners.
That's all her.
Inside scoop. Baco's wife, Toots, gave me and my wife, Renee, some little floaty toys that you put your cocktail in the floaty and it floats in the hot tub with you. These are absolutely amazing. I should take a picture, but we usually don't have clothes on in the hot tub, so that's not it. Really, it's not really selfie time.
I no joke, I've had one listener of the show, he hosts another podcast called In Obscure, and he was dead serious. He's like, no joke, but my co-host has an inflatable hot tub we could bring. We just need the hotel to fill it up with water. people are listening, Ron, is all I'm trying to say.
That's too cool, man. That's too cool. And I appreciate you and what you're doing. I can't wait to see you in Nashville. And I appreciate all your support, your friendship. You're a good dude, and you're part of my family always.
Thank you so much, Ron. And, you know, I'd like to say this in closing. You've had quite a career. You should think about writing a book sometime.
I am totally immersed in rewriting my autobiography. How many guys get a chance to rewrite their autobiography? But it came out in 2014, Baco, as you know, Even Keel, Life on the Streets of Rock and Roll, my book. And we have released
amazing
the audio
book, by the way.
Thank you. We've released the audiobook one chapter at a time on the Patreon platform. And as I've been reading the audiobook, I've realized that some things have changed and there's a lot that I left out. And I'd like to fix that. So I am revising that audiobook.
Nice.
The actual book itself, Even Keel,
right,
with additional content. I'm redoing the intro, the introduction, fixing some of the typos. And because I did the whole thing by myself, I proofread it. I did all. There's probably half a dozen typos in there that really chapped my ass, and I skipped over a lot of stuff. The last 20 years. There's a lot of Iron Horse. There's a lot of Steeler. There's a lot of stuff that I left out. I'm going to go ahead and include that. Write that in the new edition, which is going to be released January 28th. 2022. So we're going to go ahead and peg the release date for the new album and the book simultaneously on the same date. Is it the 28th or the 29th? I'm not sure, but within that 24-hour period, because there is a dispute over the Right to Rock release date and the Metal Cowboy release date. I'm pretty sure it was the 28th. Some of the fans go, no, it was yesterday. Tomorrow. It's the 28th. I had great luck releasing The Right to Rock on January 28th, Metal
that's
Cowboy.
That's right. Yeah, you had a bit of a hot streak there.
Yeah, so that's my preferred release date of choice. So let's go ahead and set that. We'll announce it right now on the Cobras and Fire podcast. The new Ron Keel album and the new edition of my book will be released on January 28th, 2022. It'll be here before you know it.
Ron, you never disappoint. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your writing session to at least talk to me and share a little bit of Ron Keel with the Cobras and Fire audience. We definitely appreciate it.
I appreciate you, and I enjoyed it. Hope everybody had listened, got something out of it and enjoyed it as much as I did. I know it's been a long conversation. I get a little long-winded, but I got a lot to say, and I appreciate the opportunity.
All the best to Renee, Toots, and of course, give my best to the guys in the band as well.
You got it. Thanks. Let me know when you're recording, so I'll start my comedy routine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I already started recording.
Good.